I yell it. It's a Hebrew word, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Waldman is with us. She's in Berkeley. Of course, she is, I guess, famous, you could say, or infamous, I don't know, for bad mother. But she's not a bad mother. We know that. And she's also a great author. The new one is The Red Hook, just out now. I should have more material here, really, to back up what I'm saying, but we'll ask her what it's all about. She's on the line with us from Berkeley. And let's say hello, shall we? Are you there?
I am here, in fact.
I yell it. Is that how you pronounce it?
It's perfect.
Yeah, because if you would have taken his name, then you would have had two unpronounceable names. And that would be intolerable.
True.
Yes. And that's gazelle, right, in Hebrew, as I recall.
Oh, my goodness. How do you know this?
I looked it up. I can't lie to you. I can't lie to you. Did your mom do a lot of Hebrew naming?
You want to know actually why I was named Ayelet? My mother's name is Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in Brooklyn, she was tormented. So she decided she was going to give me the most common name she could think of. And when she was pregnant with me, she moved to Israel. And they stayed there for about 2 years.
Oh.
Had I been born in America, you'd be talking to Penny right now.
Yeah. Penny Waldman's on the
line. Penny Waldman. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah. So that was the most common name in Israel at that time?
It was.
Ayelet?
Mm-hmm.
That's nice. It's a pretty name, though.
Thank you.
But you've done some interesting naming with your children, though, too.
Yeah, it's like a Jewish home for the aged in our house.
Yeah, you got an Abe there.
We got an Ida. We have a Sophie. We have a Zeke.
They sit around. They don't smoke anymore.
They play Mahjong.
The tiles.
They're borscht.
Yeah, that's a very nice situation you got going there.
Yeah, definitely.
You must be pretty tired of this whole bad mother thing by now, aren't you? I mean, you've been castigated, and it's not really even true.
Well, I dug my own grave, didn't I?
Yeah.
That is what I called the book.
That's true.
It depends on who you ask. Ask the teenagers in my house, they'll tell you that I'm a terrible mother. Ask the 7-year-old, and he probably likes me more than the rest.
Yeah. But the simple truth is, it's just because you like your husband more than your children. And it's rare, but it occurs, you know. Right? I mean, you're more husband-oriented than child, perhaps.
Perhaps, yes.
Yeah. Not anymore, apparently.
Well, you know, I think what happens is that I was responding to what I saw as a hierarchy that exists in the culture where everyone around me was putting their children on this pedestal above their marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, if we're putting anything on a pedestal, people, we should be putting our marriages on a pedestal.
Right.
And if a good mother is a mother who loves her children more than anyone else in the world, well, then I'm a bad mother because I love my husband more than my children.
Yeah. Could you talk to my wife? Is that possible?
You know, men ask me that all the time.
I know. I'm sure, yeah. Because it is rather rare. Now, of course, it is Michael Chabon, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author, and so, you know, maybe that's easier to love.
You know what it is?
Right.
It's not about Michael Chabon being a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
Yeah.
He does all the cooking.
Yeah.
He does most of the straightening up. It's really easy to love a man pushing a Swiffer around the floor.
Yeah. Hey, I do all that, and what credit do I get?
Do you really?
Yeah.
Do you really?
If I do a bad job, I hear.
Laundry?
I do laundry all the time.
Do you sort?
No, I don't.
Dark?
I don't sort.
There you go.
You got to draw the line somewhere.
Sorting and your life will change.
Michael Chabon, Pulitzer Prize-winning author, sorts.
Yes, he does.
What a guy! All right. Well, I guess he wins then in that situation. But then you were a journalist, correct?
Sort of.
Yes, started in journalism anyway, and then the public defender. How did that get in there?
Well, I actually started as a public defender.
Oh, you did?
I went to law school.
Yeah.
And then I was a public defender. And then it was after that I left the public defender's office. I became a stay-at-home mother for about 15 minutes. And that's when I started writing.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. And was Michael an influence on you stylistically or not?
Not necessarily stylistically, but he was certainly an influence on my choice of career. When I was staying home with my kids, I thought, I have to find something to do that I can do for 4 hours a day and spend the rest of the day lying around, you know, going to Gymboree and Mommy and Me. And I looked at him, and that's what he did. So I thought, how hard could that be?
Yeah.
Try that.
Yeah, and it's really come out well. I'm reading the, excuse me, the Red Hook one right now.
Are you really?
Yeah.
That's Great,
which is about the difficulties or impossibilities of living with Jewish in-laws, basically, right?
Sort of, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never heard it described that way, but that's going to be my new tagline for it, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. And that's very good. But what I don't understand is now you guys were voted, the third most annoying literary couple?
I know, and who gets to be one and two? I put so much effort into that.
Who's two?
I don't understand what Siri Hustvedt and Paul Auster do that's more annoying than us. I mean, really. I hate to lose.
Jonathan Franzen and himself are number two, I understand. What about Franzen being on the cover of Time magazine? That must have been pleasing.
I think it's great. I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
I just hope it sells a lot because, you know, they're not going to put any more writers on the cover unless that flies off the shelves. So tell your audience to go buy many copies of Time magazine and the book.
Yeah, Freedom is the one. It's annoying to me because, like Obama, you know, on his vacation, went into a bookstore and bought it. And you can't get it if you're a regular person because it's not out yet.
Yeah, I
think it's out
that
maybe
they
today.
Snuck him a copy.
Yeah. Not fair.
Not fair.
Yeah.
I read it months ago.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Even before the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually got an early copy. It's a fabulous book.
Excellent. Really good. Does Michael turn his work over to you for review and comments, and do you do the same with him?
Nothing leaves this house that hasn't been edited by the other person, and not even email usually.
Yeah. What about your blog? Does he edit that?
That's the one thing he didn't edit, and that's why I got into so much trouble.
Yeah. Is that that came out on the blog, that whole thing about you love your husband?
No, I think that was an essay that I wrote for an anthology. I blogged for all of, I think, 6 weeks altogether, way back when, about 5 years ago. But in that 6 weeks, I managed to say plenty of things that got me in a whole load of grief. But the essay that I wrote that I said I love my husband more than my kids was for a literary anthology, which is why I said it, because how many people read literary anthologies? Nobody.
No.
No one was going to read it.
No, the people who write them read them, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe even. They read their own essays.
Yeah.
And then it got picked up by the New York Times. And, you know, when I was so excited to be in the New York Times, I didn't bother to put sort of think through the difference between being in a literary anthology that 5 people would read and a paper that 5 million people read every day.
Yeah. And that was the New York Times thing. It was about the husband-children thing.
Yes, right.
But the blogging is where you said you were hoping that your son would be gay.
Oh, that wasn't in the New York Times.
No.
That was I believe, Salon.com.
Oh, yeah, Salon, that's right.
Yeah, nobody reads that. Who reads that?
That was back in the Mothers That...
Mothers Who Think, the days of Mothers Who Think.
Yeah. And why was that? I mean, that seems like, you know, legitimate.
Why do people get mad at that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who doesn't... What mother in her right mind doesn't want a gay son who will, you know, help her choose the color of her drapes and we'll take her on wonderful trips with him and his delightful boyfriend.
Yes.
Alas, my fondest wishes have not come true, though. He is heterosexual like his dad. He's disappointed me in so many ways.
Well, you can't let him know that, though. You know, because then he'll carry that around.
No, I've told him that I'm not. You know, we've managed to forgive him. It took us a while. He had to come out as straight.
Yeah.
But he did, and, you know, we cried, but we worked through it as a family.
Your kids are very quotable, you know. They say the greatest thing. I mean, you know, you really should just, you know, write down everything they say and publish that.
I'm banned now. They have informed me that the older ones, at least, that I'm not allowed to even mention their names in print anymore.
Really? That happened with my daughters and me, too, when they reached adolescence.
Yeah.
Pre-adolescence, actually.
And you're not allowed to say anything on the air ever again.
No. And where I work here, you know, a kid would come in from her, you know, from Ellie's class and say that he knew the guy that she was going out with, and I didn't know she was going out with it, you know, and so I naturally inquired. You know, they're going to, what going together, for example, what that means, that the concept means at that age, you know, at 11 or whatever.
Well, I think nowadays it means pretty much exclusively internet, Facebook. The only way that you know that your kid has a boyfriend is if their Facebook status changes to in a relationship.
Yeah, are you single? Yeah, I'm single. I'm single again. That's what I got from her, too. I saw her on her site. It said, I'm single again. I thought, were you married? I had no... It's a shocking concept, really. I'm so out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't. Maybe you can relate more to your children than I can, but at an early age, Nora, my youngest, was having friend problems. Friends were letting her down. I said, you know, Nora, in my experience, you know, you take friends for what they can give you, and you don't expect things that you're not going to get from them. You know, you sort of know the limitations of where the friendship is, you know, and then it's not so bad. You're not disappointed.
She said, wow, that is so not female.
Yeah. Well, and then she said, Dad, you're not a girl, and you're not now.
Yeah.
So I never offered experience, you know, I mean, are you, your kids accept you as an advisor in some of these, all these things they go through?
No, I'm very careful. They come and they you know, break down and they cry, the girls especially, if there's something going on.
Yeah.
And I feel like my job is just to get indignant on their behalf. I can't necessarily give them advice, but I can tell them that they've been wronged and that, and, you know, and that I feel their pain. That's all they really want, is to know that, you know that they're suffering. And
that,
you know, you feel it too. That's all anybody wants, right? That's all your wife wants when she's upset. She doesn't want you to solve her problems.
No.
She just wants you to tell her that it's legitimate for her to be upset.
Okay. I'm going to write that down.
Yeah, write that down. I'll see all these ways that I'm going to guarantee you a more satisfying, intimate life.
Legitimate.
Yes.
I got to say it a little better than that, though. That, okay, that's legitimate.
No. No, what you say is, that horrible wretch, she ruined your life.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. But that would be her, unfortunately. And that gets back in the whole conundrum.
Now that one line, and I can't help you anymore.
No, sorry. No, thank you.
You're over.
Yeah. I thought leaving the condoms with the bag open around the house there was a nice touch, though. I mean, not every...
Listen, it's a dangerous game out there. There's all sorts of horrible diseases. And the condoms arrived at our house. I didn't order them. And there they were, a bag of candy-colored condoms. What's a person going to do with that? So I thought, I know what I'll do. And I put them in the kids' bathroom and didn't really think much else about them. And then one day there was a shriek, like someone had cut off their foot with an axe, and I went running into the bathroom, and my son and my daughter were staring at this, and they said, "Is that what we think that is?" And I said, "Well, it depends. If you think it's condoms, yes." And they were so horrified. They told me I was the most disgusting, horrible, gross person they'd ever met, and I said, "That's fine, but the bag is open, so nobody will even know if you take them out." They did take them out eventually, but that was to play water balloons.
Water balloons, right. That's exactly what I would expect.
My plans failed. But they're still, you know, they're there. I assume they have some sort of expiration date. I guess I should find that out. Does anyone know? Do you know about the expiration date?
I've had mine since junior high school in my wallet. I'm assuming it's still good should the need arise, but...
Excellent. All right, then.
Yeah, that little circle they leave in your wallet. That's a big deal in high school if you've got the circle on your wallet. Remember that?
And how many kids do you have? Let me see how, you know.
I have two girls.
Okay, so there are only a couple of them have failed.
Yeah. No, they're beyond my kith and kin now, though. One's in college and one's junior in high school, and I just try to stay out of their way. Because I'm a dad, you know, bad mother. There is no such thing as a bad dad, really.
No.
If he shows up, you just got to show up.
Yep, you just have to be there occasionally if you can. You get all the credit.
Yeah.
My husband was once in line for a cup of coffee holding the baby and a baby Bjorn, and some woman tapped him on the shoulder and said, "You are such a good dad." And I thought, what in heaven's name would I have to do to have a stranger tell me I was a good mother? I would have to, you know, perform an emergency tracheotomy on one kid while changing the baby's diaper.
Yeah.
And helping the older one with her trigonometry homework. Then maybe someone might say, okay, you did good.
Yeah. Or at least a good Heimlich maneuver or something.
Yes, exactly.
But and on the converse of that, there are the mommy police all around, people who are looking for bad mothers.
Absolutely.
And has that happened to you, where you've been accused of, you know, on the site of a bad mothering situation?
I remember once my youngest kid has a really hard time breastfeeding. He had a jaw defect, and I was once in the same cafe, in fact, online, getting a cup of tea, and I was feeding him from the bottle. And the breast milk in the bottle I had pumped at 4 o'clock in the morning, and it was stained purple from the gentian violet I was using to cure this horrible case of thrush. I had been pumping every 2 hours for months, and this woman taps me on the shoulder, and she says, "You know, breast is best. And what I should have done is dumped the purple breast milk over her head. But
yes.
Instead, I burst into hysterical tears and explained the whole situation to her.
Yeah.
And she told me, you know, you're doing a good job, but you really should be trying a little harder to get him on the breast.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I do it too. That's the terrible thing is
yeah. Have
you
done
turn
it?
Into the... Yes. I remember once going up to... we had just had a mercury poisoning scare with my oldest daughter. She ended up having mercury poisoning from eating too much canned tuna. And I saw a pregnant woman in the grocery store, and she was buying canned tuna fish. And I went up to her, and I launched into the story. And after about 2 seconds, I noticed that her eyes were kind of glazed over, and she's backing away from me. And I thought, oh, for God, what am I doing? Never mind. Eat all the tuna you want. I'm just going to go back and, you know, shop for non-partially hydrogenated vegetable oil snacks for my toddler.
Yeah. And, you know, and, oh, boy, that's something. To think that you would do that.
Yeah,
after,
right?
After all you've gone through.
Goes, so it's impossible to resist.
After that trial you had, a public trial on Oprah.
Yes, I did.
Did you get apologies for what, you know, eventually did they come around and see your point when you explained
right?
exactly where you're coming from?
Well, they came around on the show because yeah. Oprah was on my side and Oprah's audience. I mean, you know, they're not gonna buck Oprah. And in fact, they didn't even realize they were. It was like a cruise ship turning in the water. You know, it was like this big turn. By the end of the show, they were all saying, "Oh, we love Ayala. We just don't like the way she said it." But there was on the show there were women who were sort of put on as the example of the good mothers, the wonderful mothers, the mothers who pay close attention to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they emailed me afterwards and they said, you know, our marriages are in shambles. We don't know what to do. Please help us. Please help us.
Yeah.
So my advice was things like, you know, first get rid of the harpsichord. Not everybody in the family has to play a separate stringed instrument.
Yeah.
That's a good
true. Question. But, well, you went through a thing for a while where you wanted exceptional children, right? I mean,
it was the fault of one of your NPR fellows. All the children are above average. I was sure
him.
Were going to be him. Yeah. Yes. We want
they're not all like him,
unnamed.
Though.
No, yeah. You know, I thought all my kids would be, you know, the smartest kids in the gifted class with, you know, playing the perfect oboe or whatever.
Or at least early readers and early...
Early readers. I remember I called my mother once because my daughter was seven. Well, she was in first grade, and she was reading basically at a first grade level, and I called up my mother, and I was saying how upsetting it was, and I said, she only reads at a first grade level, and my mother pointed out that, you know, she was in first grade, and I said, but I was such an early reader, and she said, what are you talking about? You didn't read till third grade. What is wrong with you? We figured the short bus was going to be stopping at our house. And I said, really, I remember myself as so profoundly gifted. How is it that I don't? Really, are you sure? Yeah.
But was it the same sort of thing going on the Michael side of the family? I mean, in his background, the sort of, you know, family, whatever, arrangement, attentions, or expectations, let's say?
Well, you know, he really did read when he was 4 years old.
Oh, yeah.
So I think his... But his mother is much more easygoing. She's the neurotic Jewish lady Jean managed to skip his mother. So she just said, oh, well, they're slower than he is.
Yeah, she's quiet.
She's mellow, and she's nice to have around. If your own mother like is crazy like I am, it's really nice to have a grandmother who's very calm to go to.
You had a problem with her at first, though, because of the...
I was just jealous at first.
Yeah.
I was terribly jealous.
Did you fight over Michael?
She didn't fight. She opted out of the fight, but I fought alone, which maybe kind of defines, you know, everything is that I fight alone. But, I set out to separate the man from his mother. And it was only once I did that I could be magnanimous. And I think that's a daughter-in-law phenomenon. You know, I wrote this essay about that. And every time I read that to a group of older women, they laugh and laugh and laugh. Because that relationship between the mother and the daughter-in-law is a tormented one.
Yeah.
We ultimately reached a wonderful peace. I think as soon as I had sons and she realized that I was going to be paying the price myself one day, it was all good.
Yeah, so you're compatriots at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
But what you did the thing like we love that movie.
Yes, exactly.
You made a plural.
We think that's a terrific restaurant. Yeah. We'd be happy to take you with us to the movies. Yeah, that kind of thing.
How did Michael deal with it? I mean, in our family, my brother Clayton, oldest brother, literally his wife and my mother fought over him, and almost to the point of tugging him in different directions. But that's the only thing I know of like that. But how did Michael...
I'm sure Michael did exactly what Clayton did, which is pretend that none of it was happening.
Yeah, okay. That's
great. Yeah, right? Isn't that what they're supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't know. She didn't fight over any of the rest of us. I thought I was kind of hurt, actually, being the youngest. So, but then it no longer mattered.
She was
just
exhausted by then. Listen, I have four kids. I can tell you, by the fourth, you know, I forgot to teach the fourth kid how to tie his shoes. It slipped my mind.
Bunny ears.
Yeah, that's what I've been saying for the past 3 days.
Yeah, bunny ears. Well, it does, you know, like the thing about the pictures, you know, you have all those tons of pictures, picture books of the first child.
Right.
And videos.
An album after album.
Yeah.
I have a phone for the fourth kid. The fourth kid gets kid pictures on my phone. The other ones have albums with, you know, stuck on corners and little captions. And,
yeah.
And he's got a phone full of shots. And if I get a new phone, forget it. His childhood, the documentation of his childhood is over.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Now, and Michael seems a little more reluctant to share some of the more intimate details, but he did come out with a book sort of to rival yours, I guess, about you know, being a man, and but about being a father as well.
Yes, exactly. It's sort of the good father antidote to the bad mother.
Yeah. And I just sort of went, now the children are in both those books, and how do they, is it the same family that he talks about, that you talk about in your book?
It is funny. It's there are some incidents where we write about the same thing, but his memory is faulty, let's just say. So you see it from both points of view. Like, he says that incident where he was standing in line at a cafe happened in the grocery store.
Oh.
It happened in a cafe, but he remembers the grocery store.
That's significant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There you go.
That was the only one. And probably he doesn't want to spill the beans on too much of this stuff, but you don't mind... You don't mind being personal about things.
He's personal, too. It's a
revealing.
Pretty personal book, his book.
Yes.
He's personal in the way that men are personal, which is they say things. And
reluctantly.
They don't even they're reluctant, but they end up saying them. And so, you know, you admire them for their reluctance. But women, you just, you know, criticize for their willingness to discuss. But in the end, the same thing is written about, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, I wonder how that works out. And you outsold him, I think, didn't you? That's the important
thing.
I asked him that too, actually, when I spoke with him, and he said,
"I will say that my book made the New York Times bestseller list, and this book of his did not."
Yes,
but,
okay.
You know, that's a rare occurrence.
That's okay.
Yeah,
that's okay.
That's why he's doing that much more laundry and sorting.
Yeah. Yelit, I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us, and I know you got stuff you probably want to get to, but thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much. It was a delight. I listen to you every week, so.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yelit
Waldman, ladies and gentlemen, from Berkeley, California.